I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East. The second phase of negotiations between Israel and Palestine resistance organizations is due to begin as Donald Trump fails to ethnically cleanse some 2.3 million Palestinians into Jordan and Egypt. The Trump administration will also need to keep an eye on Brussels today as beleaguered EU leaders meet alongside NATO boss Mark Rutte and UK PM Keir Starmer, all of whom seek to prolong the proxy war on Russia through Ukraine. Ironically, then, that it's 80 years to the day since allies US President Roosevelt, UK PM Winston Churchill and Russia's Joseph Stalin met to forge a peaceful world at the Yalta Conference in Crimea at the end of World War II. Joining me now from Lake Jackson, Texas, is the Executive Director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, Daniel McAdams. He co-hosts the Ron Paul Liberty Report with ex-US presidential candidate Ron Paul, who Elon Musk offered a position to in the new Trump administration. Daniel, thanks so much for coming on. I hope Ron Paul is well and the Institute is well. I know he didn't take up the invitation from Elon Musk, I noticed, to join the Department of Government Efficiency. I don't know whether you have the details on that, why he didn't want to do it.
Well, he didn't refuse it, actually. The only thing he said is he didn't want a formal title. He doesn't need another job. He's been there and done that. But I think what he's done is he's been well welcomed into it, and he's sort of serving as a kind of mentor, I suppose. And he offers his thoughts on ways to, in a sort of more philosophical way, really address the problems of government overreach and overspending. Many of the times when he puts out some advice, Elon will retweet it. Sometimes Don Jr. will retweet it. So it's right now it's working out very well, and he's happy to not have some kind of a formal relationship.
Enjoyable to watch all this waste of money over so many years being identified and stopped. And I mean, you do a podcast, the Liberty Report. We now know, presumably, that so many so-called independent podcasts were being basically funneled money through USAID all around the world to destroy the imaginations of the people in places and all around the world without the American people even realizing their tax dollars were going towards propaganda?
And that's one of the fascinating things we've seen in this early week of the Trump administration, where he put out an executive order that put a stop to all this development aid, and that's affected what the State Department does overseas. And I think the amazing effect of it thus far has been to shine a light on just how much is going on overseas. As your viewers probably know, the National Endowment for Democracy, which is our regime change machine here in the U.S., has stopped publishing the grants that it gives out in the name of transparency, I guess. So we don't know who gets their money, which we need to know. And so stopping all this money, we just saw, I think, 2 days ago, some of the propagandists in Ukraine that have been propped up by America are saying, hold on, our money's not coming anymore. Can you guys, spot us a couple of bucks here and there? So it's really highlighting the destruction of democracy done in the name of promoting democracy. And I hope this is only the beginning.
But do you think we'll see the end of the National Endowment for Democracy? We've talked about it on this show for years and how it works hand in hand with, it has worked hand in hand with death squads.
No, absolutely. And it's profoundly anti-American. America had, at least a 4-year panic attack over the false accusations that the Russians were meddling in our elections. We've had a democratic election in Romania canceled for false accusations of the Russians meddling in the election. So we on this side of it, have a panic attack whenever this happens, but somehow we feel free to meddle in the elections overseas. I've found it rather amusing to see Chancellor Scholz criticizing Elon Musk for expressing his opinion about who he would like to see winning the German elections, and the Speaker of the Parliament in Georgia reposted it on X saying, well, what about when all the people from your own party were here meeting with the opposition and supporting them and trying to help them win? So there's a real level of hypocrisy among the U.S. and the European leaders, and hopefully shining a light on that will have some positive effect.
Yeah, Scholz, the hated leader in Germany, hated by the German people at the time of this recording. He's still chancellor, presumably. But, of course, the deep state hasn't gone away. And I suppose it's predictable that we're hearing some elements opposing Trump's desire to trim down all these nefarious activities. I mean, come to think of it, we still don't even, I mean, you mentioned the Russia hoax. We still don't even really understand what the assassination attempts against Trump were about, do we? I mean, what's your understanding at Liberty Report about this lone gunman who shot the president before he was elected?
Well, certainly a ripe field for conspiracy theories, because we just haven't gotten any information about it. Who was he acting? Why was it so quick to get rid of the body? You know, what was going on? It would be nice to know more about this, and hopefully we will. I mean, this seems like, and I don't want to be too optimistic, I don't want to be a Pollyanna here, but this seems like an administration thus far that's interested in shining the light on some of the lies told to us by the government. Your viewers probably know for several weeks, a few weeks ago, Americans were ready to go to World War III with China because there were a few drones flying over New Jersey, right? And now we find out from this new administration that the old administration knew all about it. They knew that it was already approved, that it was just a government operation, what have you. But they let the American people believe that we were under attack by Chinese drones, I guess to ramp up the fear. So, you know, the best disinfectant really is transparency. And I would just say more, more, more of it.
Do you think we'll ever get Genocide Joe, Butcher Blinken, the rest of them, to answer for all these, the waste of money, for a start, of the American people while your infrastructure has been destroyed over generations, let alone the foreign policy that they've advocated, that they'll ever be called to account under this Trump administration? I mean, clearly Trump is going to call them to account for the Russia hoax, presumably.
Well, there are many ways of being called into account. Having your reputation ruined forever is one of those ways. I think anyone associated, I would be surprised to see someone like Blinken back in any way. He'll probably scurry off to some think tank somewhere, funded by some, military industrial complex company, what have you. But having your reputation ruined hurts, I think. I happen to be a religious person, so I think ultimately we'll all be judged by our activities on earth. So there may be an ultimate judgment there for the murder and mayhem under the 4 years of Biden. But let's not forget, Biden spent 50 years endorsing murder and mayhem. He never saw a war that he didn't want to support. Yeah, he talked a good talk, but in the end, he voted for all of the evil wars of the George W. Bush administration, and so on and so on. So this is just the cap of a long career of being a thoroughly blood-soaked American neocon politician.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people wanting earthly punishment, aside from divine punishment for these people. Bizarrely, we had Max Blumenthal of The Gray Zone on Saturday's show, and he's previously indicated some optimism about Pete Hegseth, which you wouldn't normally expect, him being a Christian Zionist with his famous tattoo, which I don't know what it means for the Palestinians. But will his presence at the Pentagon be a breath of fresh air in the sense that he won't be doing business as usual, the largest military budget in the world?
I mean, it's hard to temper your optimism and expectations. I mean, what I would like the Pentagon to be like and what I realistically believe it would be like in a positive way are two very different things. You know, we have an outgoing Secretary of Defense who was completely useless, who was absolutely beholden to the military-industrial complex, to defense contractors, didn't give a damn about the consequences of thousands killed. And so you have this incoming Secretary of Defense who comes...
Sorry to interrupt that. Just before you get to Hegseth, I should say Lloyd Austin is a director, I think, of Raytheon, so he'll benefit from any Trump Iron Dome. But anyway.
Yeah, that's how it works. That's how it works. But Hegseth is an outsider. He is, you're right, he has extremist views when it comes to his religion in terms of Israel, and that's rather concerning. However, as an outsider, I think he will also be beholden to President Trump. But the other thing that I would just say, Afsan, is that something interesting is happening in the Pentagon, and maybe we can talk about it a bit later, but Eli Lake did a piece, the last week it was, in the Free Press. Now, he's a neocon writer. And he is having an absolute panic attack as well on what's happening inside the Republican Party. The fight between the old right, which is resurging in the Republican Party, and the neocons that have been in the driver's seat since, I would say, the Reagan administration, 1983, something in that era. But you're seeing some people coming in the second tier in the Pentagon who are, now I'm a non-interventionist, so they're not where I am, but they're what we would call realist restrainers. They believe we should have a restrained foreign policy. And these are people, I hesitate to say the names because they'll put a target on them, but Dan Caldwell have a top policy position in the Pentagon, a known restrainer. Elbridge Colby, who I disagree with on many things, but he's definitely in favor of restraint. He's the grandson of the famed CIA director back in the 60s. Michael DeMeo. William Colby. Yeah, sorry. So Michael DeMeo is going to be at a senior position dealing with Middle East policy, and has been critical of Israel's behavior in the region, and doesn't believe we should go to war with Iran. And there are a few others. Andrew Byers is one. And they have allies in people like Don Jr. So Eli Lake is writing about this as what a disaster and what a nightmare this is. And people like me are looking at it saying there's something hopeful because, you know, Austin, this is what the neocons always did. They would, and I've seen it, I saw it when George W. Bush came in. I was close to some people who were populating the administration there, and I saw how it worked. You get someone in at a certain level, and they just, whoosh, they bring in all of their people, and they've done it very, very effectively. So it's nice to see some people on the other side who are a little bit more dedicated to a realistic foreign policy doing the same thing. So what I think this might be is you might have a State Department that's very activist, but they might be tempered by a Pentagon that says, hold on, we can't do that. This is not going to happen. We don't have the ability to do this. And that's a healthy thing. That's what I was hoping for in the Trump administration to see, because Trump likes this. This is how he does his business. He likes to have people playing off against each other, people of opposing views duking it out while he sits back and makes his decision. This is the first hint I've seen that this might be the case in his administration, and I'm very happy to see it, I have to say.
Yeah, and like you said, we have to temper things, but Trump watches Rupert Murdoch's Fox News and their foreign policy agenda very clear, famous for firing Tucker Carlson, and there is Waltz and Rubio. Waltz, his national security advisor, and I should say John Bolton was on this show the other day, his longest-serving national security advisor. I don't think Waltz is going to be as interventionist as Bolton, but Waltz and Marco Rubio, who I don't know, in your hemisphere may launch a full-scale war with the Southern Hemisphere, which has always been his idea. They're closer, though, aren't they? I mean, even before it gets to the Pentagon and Pete Hegseth, every day, I know that the confirmation hearings have been going on with Lieutenant Colonel Tulsi Gabbard and so on, but Waltz is in a very powerful position, and Rubio is the Secretary of State. He's the Blinken figure.
Yeah, Waltz is, I think, the one to be more worried about than Rubio. I think what's going to happen to Rubio, and this is just speculation on my part, we did a show about it a few days ago, is that he's going to be a very weak Secretary of State. He's going to be a figurehead, and he's going to be the fall guy to do things that Trump doesn't want to do. And that may entice him to leave before too long. I just think that. I think he's relying for foreign policy advice on people that are closer to him, that are outside of this sort of traditional U.S. Executive departments. He's relying more on personal relationships rather than, you know, how we've traditionally seen things organized. So I think Rubio, aside from, as you say, he's always been, you know, drooling about Venezuela and Cuba. Aside from that, I don't think he's going to be particularly powerful Secretary of State. Waltz, on the other hand, is very close to the president. I think when those of us who follow foreign policy closely, when they listen to what he says, he seems very ill-informed about the rest of the world. He doesn't seem to understand that Russia is not losing in Ukraine. Sorry, Mike, that's not happening, and that invading Iran will not be a cakewalk. We've heard that before. And in fact, it's interesting because Waltz did work for George W. Bush. That's where he comes from. That's his milieu.
Well, I tell you, Daniel, we'll get to Ukraine in part two. I'll stop you there.
Okay.
More from the co-star of the Ron Paul Liberty Report and executive director of the Ron Paul Institute after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the co-star of the Ron Paul Liberty Report and executive director of the Ron Paul Institute, Daniel McAdams. Daniel, you were talking about Ukraine and misapprehensions, misinformation, literally, that Donald Trump may be being fed since he went back to the Oval Office. Actually, the cornflake heir, Keith Kellogg, seems weird that he could possibly be the Ukraine envoy, isn't it? I know you're saying that he's playing people off. Do you think that's... Where's he getting the information that he can leverage sanctions on Russia somehow in any deal over the proxy war on Russia through Ukraine when as we know, Russia's done really well out of the sanctions, and the only sanctions, I understand it, are for uranium to US nuclear power stations. That's the only sanction left to a Trump administration. I mean, clearly that's been seen as idiotic all around the world.
Well, I guess you could say that I've had the misfortune of doing foreign policy in the D.C. area for a couple of decades. And so I know that it's a circular argument. You know, anyone who speaks outside of the sort of generally accepted wisdom is considered, you know, a freak. And that's how it was being there. There are very few people, and they can hurt you if you are. So Kellogg's a product of that. I mean, he's a product of that milieu. And he thinks like everyone else who thinks. In that. But, you know, he did this goofy piece with Fred Flights, who's an old neocon, old line neocon, actually worked for John Bolton for quite some time. So they came up with this crazy article. I'm sure you remember it back in early 24, mid 24, whenever it was, about here's how we can do it. We're going to freeze the conflict for 100 days. And, you know, and we're going to tell Putin, if you don't come to the table, we're going to sanction you. And we're going to tell Ukraine, if you don't come to the table, we're going to stop giving you weapons. And here's what's going to happen. It's completely bizarre, completely devoid of reality approach. Sadly, it was, well, that's probably why it was accepted in foreign policy circles in Washington. But when you are winning a war, you don't accept a ceasefire. That's just a fact. You know, and when you have expended so much blood and treasure, as Russia has, although quite a bit short from the million casualties that Trump claims, we can get to that later. But nevertheless, when you've expended so much and someone comes along and says, hey, you're winning, but can you stop fighting now? And by the way, Ukraine will only have a 10-year pause on NATO. And in the meantime, the West can go back to rearming Ukraine and getting it ready to fight again. Now, I think if Putin accepted a deal like that, he would probably, I would say rightly, he would be overthrown. Because if you really want to overthrow someone like Putin, get him to accept such a stupid and suicidal. We've been through Minsk 1 and Minsk 2. We've been through this whole thing before. There's absolutely no way this works. So how could you come to the table with an offer like this and somehow think that it would work? You're getting some bad advice. There's some another theory that maybe we can talk about later, what's really happening.
Yeah, and we know that Elon Musk, who you're kind of saying your boss advises to an extent, not in this field particularly, but we got Musk. We got Tucker Carlson, you know, unofficial type people around him, let alone Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. and all these people who are clearly saying, no, this is nothing to do with this. This is to do with the expansion of NATO in the first place. So, I mean, is Trump going to get incredibly angry with the people telling him the wrong information, making him look stupid? You kind of said Rubio may go early. Because Trump is going to flip out when he realizes all this information is rubbish. And as I understand it, he's declassifying papers that presumably will show all sorts of corruption. And he's very aware of Ukraine, not so much as a proxy war in Russia, but because of the ties to the corruption of the Biden crime family.
Yes, and that's a great angle. It's very important. Here's how you can stop this. Do an audit. And I think they're leaning toward this. Do an audit of the spending on Ukraine. Of the $200 billion, you know, and you now have a government oversight chairman in the Senate by the name of Senator Rand Paul, who could certainly do some oversight on some of that money. Audit this stuff, and when you audit it, Americans will see where the money went, and that'll have a huge effect. But, you know, there's another school of thought on Trump, and I don't know if this is a fact, and there are people that I respect who feel strongly that this might be the case, that he is going to make a deal that he knows will be rejected by both sides, and then he can wash his hands, Pontius Pilate, say, look, this is not my war. I didn't start the war. You guys, I gave you a deal. You didn't want it. You solve it on your own. I mean, I think that would be the best thing. And if this is, I hate to go the sort of the 4D chess route, but if this is the game he's playing, then it's going to be a win-win for everyone. You know, But if he is going down the road of you lost a million, your economy is in tatters, I'm going to sanction a couple more things, and this is going to be a win, he is in for a rude awakening. We have done the same thing, the sanctions on Russia, year after year, thousands of them, and they have not destroyed the Russian economy. They destroyed the European economy. So if he goes down that path, he's in for a big L.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge caveat against any optimism, clearly, about Trump. But, I mean, you at the Rand Paul Institute know how important
Ron Paul, yeah.
Ron Paul, sorry, Rand Paul as a senator, who actually differs over Israel, which I want to get on to. His son differs over that. But the First Amendment, the importance of that in your constitution, what's it made you feel to see attempts at trying to reclaim that First Amendment in these early days of a Trump administration? I mean, that presumably you regard as one of the most important things. Without the First Amendment, there is nothing.
Absolutely. And I mean, to tackle the unholy alliance between the government and corporations, I mean, there's a word for it. It starts with an F, and it's called fascism. You know, when the government gets together with corporations and seeks to deny Americans their fundamental rights. And that's what happened for the last 4 years. And we saw, thanks to great journalists like Matt Taibbi and others, what had happened. And we saw the lid blown off of it. And so I think with this early executive orders forbidding federal government officials from colluding with private companies, quote unquote, private companies, to deny Americans their rights is a very positive thing. And I hope it goes forward. It shouldn't be necessary. But I think it might be some attempt to right some of the wrongs that have been done, and also to raise awareness. You know, but I think you also have the danger of, I mean, the right has its own sort of woke side as well. And there are things that they don't like having discussed either. And so as people who are libertarians or anarchists or whatever you would say, small government people, sometimes you have to accept speech that you don't like, and you shouldn't try to get government to silence it. So I think there's a danger in the U.S. with a newly redefined anti-Semitism that the Congress has adopted last year in the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act that includes criticism of the secular state of Israel as a potential definition of anti-Semitism. There's also a slippery slope there on the right toward squelching speech. And I think the solution to speech that you may consider hate speech is more speech. So I hope there are still some dangers, but there's some good signs early, I think.
Yeah, they want to deport students on visas who express themselves about the Gaza genocide, it seems. The Twitter, you mentioned Matt Taibbi, friend of the show, who, of course, worked with Elon Musk on the Twitter files. I suppose that's what one really wants over all these issues like Ukraine. And you intimate there about the woke right. That Miriam Adelson money, do you think will be a deciding factor in preventing free speech when it comes to Palestine?
Well, I hope not. I mean, she's just one person, and she's given a lot of money. But I think there's a method in Trump's madness in a way. I mean, he did get this ceasefire, and maybe he promised Netanyahu that, hey, I just need to look good. When the cameras are off, you can go back to your favorite exercise, slaughtering civilians. That may be the case, but nevertheless, the world has seen the images of Palestinians coming back to their homes. It's going to be difficult for them to start the death machine up again and start bombing them. Now, not to say they won't try it. They may well do it, but it's going to be more difficult. So this deal is overall a very much of a positive thing. And I think we know that Trump doesn't necessarily like Netanyahu very much. Now, Trump has said some dumb things about cleaning out the area, which sounds very, very ominous to me. But nevertheless, I think there's an instinct in him that wants things to be cleaned up in a better way, like no messes. He wants to disengage us from the Middle East, and I hope that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, the bombing of Lebanon in the aftermath of the ceasefire and the continuing destruction of the West Bank, of course, has gone hand in hand with that. You gave air quotes to private contractors, I suppose, illuminating the fact that the Constitution applies not to private entities in your country, but of course, Facebook, Google, they're not. They're actually government contractors, and they're huge amounts of money. They're basically Soviet-style government firms, one might even say. Have you noticed any diminution of censorship for Liberty Report? I know you're on Rumble like we are. Supposedly, Trump signed an executive order guaranteeing freedom of speech. I don't know why he has to do that if you have a constitution anyway. But have you noticed any difference? Because presumably the Ron Paul Liberty Report hasn't done well from Google, Facebook, Twitter before Elon Musk.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were banned from Facebook for a while and a few things like that. I mean, one of the reasons we went to Rumble, well, they called us up and said, hey, we see you having some trouble with YouTube. We've got a free speech platform. Why don't you come over to us? And we did, and we were very happy. We've never had a single problem with Rumble. And we were worried about YouTube. You put a lot of that, you know as well, you put so much effort into a show and it gets, the rug gets pulled out from under you. I think things are certainly better because it's been recognized now that the tide has turned in our favor, that censorship is not good. But these companies, you're right, I mean, they are not private companies if they're colluding behind the scenes with governments, to silence American citizens. You know, there's a misconception that that the First Amendment is somehow the government grants you the right to free speech in the First Amendment. That's not the case. The First Amendment recognizes the natural state of man given to us by our creator, that we have the right to do these things. And it's not a government that grants it. And so there's a lot of right-wing Americans who are confused. Well, foreigners shouldn't come over here and have the right to free speech. But you're missing the whole point of it. The whole point is recognizing the state of nature. We should have these rights. We should be an example to the rest of the world.
Daniel McAdams, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.